Yeah, hiya. Yeah, it's well, I won't be sticking around. I will be handing in my resignation if we start calling ourselves the Sensible Party. That's far too close to the term common sense, which I think is always, you know, whenever you hear the term common sense, it's always followed by the absolute most crazy, unhinged, out of pocket thing you've ever heard. So. You know, or what is generally accepted as common sense generally is pretty evil, usually malignant evil. But I think our party, I mean, you sort of finished on the point that we sort of a lot of our views as the party are seen as sort of quite quite left wing, you know, no borders against nations and things like that. Like, yeah, even all the other left parties would even split with us on that one. But we've also, in our history, been accused of being quite socially conservative as well, which, especially, I think, especially recently, you know, you couldn't have said that about the 1904 SPGB, of course, because we were one of the first ones to address racism as an issue in society, which, you know, obviously makes sense. But I think over the years, yeah, we probably, because we are an older party, we probably are. Considered quite socially conservative, but I don't know. I couldn't answer that charge because I'm definitely not socially conservative. So, thank you.
Okay, interesting point. Maybe we'll come back to Andy next.
Thank you, Paddy. Thanks, Kevin. That was great. I mean, you are, you know, I'm lucky, really, in one respect. And I don't want to sound nationalist at all, but my grandfather was Welsh, and my mother's are Irish, so I have the gift of being able to sing well and speak well. But you spoke even better than I ever could. You're wonderful, so thank you very much. And I think what I took away from your analysis was that actually the party is not possible to define in a left-right spectrum way. And I studied sociology, not at a high level. I have a first-class degree in a you know BA level thing, but and it was, you know, very much, you know, left-right being the spectrum of politics that was available to have discussion about. And when I came across the Socialist Party of Great Britain, it was a revelation, really, because we transcend that spectrum. And some of the, I can't remember all of them now because there were so many points coming across so quickly and such great examples of contradictions within the practitioners of the art, you know, the sort of capitalist political parties and so on, that I just thought, wow, you know, it's so true, isn't it? That, you know, they're so interchangeable, really. And yet our case is completely different to any of those that want to reorganize society, because they don't actually reorganize it, do they, once they get into power? So I'd just like to say thanks. I really enjoyed that, and it's really given me a lot to think about. So yeah, thanks, Kev.
Very welcome.
Okay, thanks. Howard next.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks very much indeed. Yeah, I was wondering how you were going to approach this. It was sort of, in a sense, not in the least predictable, I suppose. It was. It was provocative. That's the word I'm looking for, because you know, the Socialist Party has always been at great pains to say we're neither right wing nor left wing, because the right and left are part of the capitalist spectrum. And as Andy just said very effectively, we transcend that spectrum. We think we do anyway. We hope we do. So we are neither right wing nor left wing in that sense, because you know, we don't want this, certainly don't want the kind of things that the right want. They're sort of well invested in the current system. We don't want the kind of things that the left want either, because we think that even if they wouldn't admit it and often don't know it, they're pretty well invested in it too. But nevertheless, they do say lots of things that we would agree with. I mean, if I see newspapers being sold on the street, I nearly always buy one, whether they're left-wing or right-wing. They're usually left-wing. You know, if I buy a right-wing one, there's damn all in it that I'm going to agree with. I'm certain about that. But the left-wing ones, you know, I don't know, Socialist Workers' Party or someone like that, you know, quite a few of the things that are in there I can agree with in terms of the way the system works, the way the system is weighted, the way it operates, etc. The trouble is the alternative that they offer is, well, it's not really an alternative. It's mainly sort of organizing capitalism better, because what they never say they want is a moneyless, wageless society. If you put it to them, they might well agree, yes, we do want that in the very long term, but, you know, let's not even think about it now because it's a long way off. And of course, saying that means it'll always be a long way off. But there's definitely more in what you hear about them and what you read in the literature that we can agree with. So it can be argued, I think, reasonably that we are closer to them than we are to, I don't know, you know, organizations like Reform or someone like that. By the way, Kevin, who said that, somebody said just now anyway, that the left generally talk about no borders. Very rare indeed. Left-wing organizations, you know, they're very, very much sort of invested in their own national system. So, all right, they'll campaign for, you know, Palestine and things and you know, express views on Ukraine and stuff like that. But broadly speaking, they haven't got this vision of a borderless society, of a whole world society, you know, without buying and selling, etc., and without the market. So although I wouldn't go as far as a member of my branch tends to do when he talks about the left and the right, he refers to them as two cheeks of the same bum. I wouldn't go as far as that. But nevertheless, I do think, as Andy just put it, we are outside. We're definitely outside. And as far as I'm concerned, ahead of that spectrum.
Yep.
Okay, thanks, Howard. Kevin, is there anything you want to come back on before?
Well, just very quickly, I think Andy made a great point, a few of us, that we certainly feel we transcend the spectrum. So my thing would be, though, the outside perception is that we're in the spectrum, that we're, you know, very much at the far left end, for the kind of reasons I think that Howard outlined, you know, that at least on a superficial level, we seem to have a bit more in common. So whereas I'd like to see maybe stress more, or if we can find some way, you know, we're not in that spectrum. You know, we don't distinguish, you know, but the perception, of course, is that just because of the name alone, and obviously for the ideology and the origins of the party, we are seen as, you know, another maybe slightly eccentric or far left party kind of thing. But anyway.
Okay, Steve. Thank you. Steve, next.
Yeah, just a couple of points I want to make. First of all, these right wingers, you know, you think the classic Thatcher quote, there's no such thing as society. And yet at the same time, the party that she belonged to, at least some sections of it, for example, Michael Heseltine, I keep quoting this fella, fought like crazy to keep things, what was it called, that the helicopter company? Westland. He fought like crazy to keep Westland going because he realised that there was a strategic interest in that, in having that sort of industry, having that sort of, those armaments available to British capital. I would imagine the same thing went on, but there must have been a similar sort of struggle about the Harrier jump jets. which were apparently absolutely horrifyingly dangerous weapons. But they went, unlike the French, who would have gone for a national solution, they went with the Americans, and just basically got rid of jump jets. So there's this weird thing about capitalist politicians. Once they're in power, they start doing what the system requires them to do. And just as a, for example, another example from the right, you mentioned this fella, is it Orban in Hungary? Mm. Well, there's a really interesting piece on the Global Times, the Chinese propaganda outlet, and just quote from this is in sixth of this month, and he's apparently the summary of it is, Hungary does not view China as a threat, but rather as a tremendous opportunity. Within the EU, some tend to advocate for restricting cooperation with China, and I am striving to correct this trend. Now, I wonder what on earth these people that support the Chinese system, how do these people react to that? It's just like this bloke is by all intents, apparently, insanely racist, and yet he's going there are actually a lot of current ties. If you look at this Global Times, it's quite revealing about the way that these so-called right-wingers kowtow to Chinese so-called Communist Party. On the other side of the bum crack, all this thing about lefties being so nice about and wanting peace. Well, I don't know if anybody noticed it, but I posted something from the Communist Party of Britain, Marxist-Leninists, who want to defend our sovereignty. And we've got an example from the Marxist-Humanist Initiative, who've got one of the economists, who's probably the closest to the SPGB in terms of economics as can be, Kleiman, and they're in favour of Ukrainian self-determination. It's just like, what? You're supposed to be fucking Marxist, and you want to talk about your national self-determination or the right to national self-determination. It's just utter confusion. They're detached from our class interest, which is to create create an association of free producers. They forget this. They forget what we're about, which is trying to ensure that we as the dispossessed or the never possessed, we forget what our self-interest is. And that, to me, is what's unique about the Socialist Party. As a class, our liberation is the only thing we're struggling for. Right, thank you.
Okay, thanks for that. Kevin, do you want to come back on that before I carry on?
No, I think I think we're all actually saying quite similar things. I think everybody has a different perspective. But no, I'm happy to let the conversation and keep going.
Okay, well, Darren's up next.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Just one minor point as I'm walking out the door. You know, I've been in the party a long time now, since I've been aware of the party since the 80s, and obviously from that period I remember the point was made, you know, we're not part of the left or the right, you know, two wings of the same bird, two cheeks of the same arse. But I do think it's interesting to point out that, you know, when the party was formed, you know, 1904, I don't think it necessarily had that position. That's a position that it obviously developed over time and experience. You know, I generally do think that, you know, the party's, you know, impossibilist revolt, its hostility to the left in 1904, despite all that, there was a genuine belief or understanding that there was individuals and groups on the left who shared the same final goal as ourselves, you know, whether it be the Social Democratic Federation, elements within the ILP, And I think personally what's interesting in is how, you know, in staying the same, how we actually kind of like, we kind of anticipated what would happen historically is that, you know, the Socialist Party then said, you know, for all these people who said to the SPGB, yes, we totally agree with the final goal. You know, we totally agree with the definition of socialism. This is what we are seeking to finally achieve. However, we have to build our movement now. We have to like deal with like genuine sort of social deprivation and needs now. And this is how we go about it. This is how we grow the movement, by putting forward reforms, arguing for reforms, recognizing that the final goal is just over the horizon of socialism. And the SPGB back then said, you know, unfortunately what will happen is that if you don't sort of, if you don't make, you know, the connection between, you know, the here and now and the future, you'll eventually get enveloped, you know, in capitalist politics. And that's obviously what happened. That's obviously what happened. And I think it's interesting to look at the history of the party that, you know, for many decades of our history, we were kind of like alone, apart from a few other groups, in actually acknowledging what socialism stroke communism actually was. And it's, I think it's interesting that it's only in like the last couple of decades, maybe because, you know, maybe it is the aftermath of the collapse of the Soviet Union, etc., that there is finally a kind of acknowledgement, even if it's just in academic circles, of like a recognition of what socialism always was. I mean, not to the extent that these people are actually arguing for the same sort of no compromise impossibilism that we are, but they're at least acknowledging now, I think, you know, even if it is still very, very small numbers, they're acknowledging now what socialism was. And I would argue that for many decades, that wasn't apparent on the left, the left wing of capitalism, you know, the Soviet, you know, the people, the apologists for the Soviet Union, the apologists for the Russian Revolution, you know, the people who supported the Labour Party, you know. And I do think it's interesting, and maybe it is an optimistic note, that there is maybe, there is probably a bigger audience now for actually arguing what socialism was than there has been for many, many decades. So I think that's what's interesting. You know, that's, I'll just stop there, you know. Cheers.
Oh, thanks for that. We like positive notes, Darren. Mike's next.
Cheers, yeah, thanks, yeah. Yeah, thanks, Kevin. Yeah, that was a really, like, yeah, lively and interesting talk. Yeah, I enjoyed that. And lots of thoughtful contributions so far. My two penneth worth is, yeah, I'm very much of the view that we should, us in the SPGB, should consider ourselves outside the left-right spectrum, as, you know, that spectrum is a spectrum of supporting capitalism. Although the, you know, both left-wing and right-wing stances, but both sort of come from a support of the capitalist system and trying to sort of tweak it in the direction they think is best. I think that there is a difference between sort of how those stances are sort of manifested, if you like, in the individuals. And I think, I mean, it's going to be a bit of a generalisation, of course, you know, sort of informed by me digesting a lot of both left-wing and right-wing crap on YouTube. I watch too much of that. But yeah, sort of left-wing views, you know, they often sort of come from a good place, you know, a feeling of, you know, wanting equality, fairness, and so on. And, you know, sort of left-wingers tend to give off good vibes. You can't always say that for right-wing people, of course. You know, their sort of thought process is supposedly, you know, sort of coldly rational, you know, deciding what's practically best for the status quo, you know, regardless of minority groups who might suffer because of those policies. So yeah, there's a coldness to a lot of right-wing thought. So I think, yeah, what sort of underpins left-wing and right-wing is quite sort of different, and sort of comes from a different sort of mental process which leads up to that viewpoint. And of course, neither is revolutionary, and of course that's where it differs from our viewpoint, which obviously we like to think comes from a good place, sort of emotionally, morally, if you want to use words like that, but also relies on, you know, sort of rationally thinking through how society could work. So, you know, I suppose our sort of revolutionary viewpoint gives us a clarity of thought, which both left-wing and right-wing groups don't have, because they're still sort of trapped in the mire of supporting capitalism. Yeah, anyway, that's really... Oh, I suppose another point is in sort of common parlance, you know, the word socialism is used much more now than it was a couple of decades ago. I think there was a lot of sort of mainstream media silence on using the word socialism, whereas you do hear it a bit more often on the mainstream media now, and of course social media. But of course, you know, that comes with the age-old confusion of what that what that term means. But yeah, anyway, that's me done. Yeah, thank you. Cheers. Yeah.
Okay, thanks for that, Mike. Paul, next.
Yeah, I think one way of looking at this is to think about who is it that we appeal to, both in the sense of who do we direct our propaganda to, and also who do we get the most sympathetic hearing from? I mean, it's quite clearly the answer to that is it's the left, not the right. You know, we would hand out leaflets outside your party or Green Party conferences and meetings. I don't think we'd really bother outside reform, would we? And you know, we might advertise in left-wing magazines and newspapers. I don't think we'd bother to advertise in The Spectator or something. So we do realise, in effect, that the left are sort of closer to us. I'm not saying that we're part of the left, but the left are closer to us, and that we'll get a much more sympathetic, I'm not saying agreeing with us, but more sympathetic hearing from the left than we will from right-wingers. So in that sense, we are closer to the left. Absolutely not saying we are part of the left or that we are left-wing, but let's put it this way, the left are closer to us. That's another way of putting it, I suppose. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Steve again.
I just wanted to make, I agree with what somebody just recently just said about you talk to some of these left-wing organisations and some of them will actually say, we want a moneyless, classless society as well, but we don't talk about it. And in fact, about 3 months ago, I was in Preston doing some leaflets, and I got talking to this SWP, and she'd never heard of abolishing the wages system. All right. So it was absolute news to her. She's obviously an activist within the SWP. Didn't have a clue what I was fucking talking about. But anyway, I think we need to just stress why we take the position that we do take about towards these left-wing organisations. It's, you know, and certainly we'd accept that they've got a lot of similar attitudes to us. Absolutely no doubt about it. But the issue is, if these people were ever to get into power, they will be faced with the world capitalist market. And the world capitalist market is what will determine what goes on within society. Whatever they want to do, however much they would like to have superb education, superb national systems and all this sort of thing, whatever they can do will be extremely limited by the economic cycle of capital, the inevitable economic cycle of boom and slump. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Andy again.
Yeah, thanks, Paddy. Thanks for the contributions as well. It's been such a good talk, this. I'm just going to pick up on what Paul said, and a bit about possibly even what Mike and Steve alluded to as well. Kevin, you know, Kevin gave the address, and it was about, you know, left and right and so on. So I was sort of just thinking, pondering, just listening, and you know, lost in thought as the talk has gone on and the discussion's gone on. And what's sort of occurring to me is that, you know, what I would hold very much to the view that we're not on the left-right spectrum whatsoever, that ultimately the Socialist Party of Great Britain was sort of formed in the womb of the original left. Now, I'm no historian, but my understanding is that the term left-wing was something to do with the French establishment of the revolution, you know, the French sort of situation, and how that they established the parliament, and those on the left, apparently the left wing as they were called, were different from those on the right wing. And so that's quite interesting, and something I need to read up on and find out more about. But then also what I just think anecdotally, really, for myself, but what it seems to me is that people who regard themselves, some people, not all, but some who regard themselves as left-wing now, aren't necessarily interested in working class issues. It's like they are, you know, they regard themselves as kind of like a, you know, as Tony Blair used to say, oh, we're progressives, or we're, you know, he come up with other terms, you know, to differentiate themselves from others, you know, and they would pick up on sort of, you know, we like they're into women's rights and other issues, you know, sort of equality issues, shall we say. But it was very much about ameliorating the competition between workers and codifying that, you know, putting people in, separating people ultimately into boxed groups who could kind of have competing demands within the system, but whilst also kept down essentially as wage slaves. And that's always really frustrated me and made me feel really angry about the way that the more left-wing parties can divide people ultimately. And, you know, so I've always had a massive libertarian streak in myself, you know, where I think, oh, well... that lefty kind of culture is really anathema to me, to be honest. So I'm just speaking very personally there on that. So I know I've rambled, but anyway, thanks for listening.
Okay, thanks, Howard.
Hi. Can I just refer to something that Kevin said towards the end of his talk about the sensible party, about if we were to sort of invent what the Socialist Party stands for now, would we call ourselves a Socialist Party? We wouldn't, would we? No chance whatever we'd do that. I don't know what name we'd find. Don't think it would be sensible, but it wouldn't be, somehow it wouldn't be socialist. And, you know, several people recently, and I've seen this a lot on sort of social media, have quite independently come to the same sort of conclusion as us and call themselves various different things, which... on socialism, and they've been sort of a bit shocked to hear that, and if we get in touch with them, an organisation that called itself socialist shares that idea, because for them, of course, socialism is Russia or China or something like that. So I wanted to make that point. I think we're stuck with it now, by the way. I don't think we should change it now for all sorts of reasons. Okay. And also it provides an opportunity to debate, doesn't it? You know, if people say, oh, I don't support you because, you know, I don't support socialists because of what happened in Russia and so on, you say, well, no, that's nothing to do with us. That isn't socialism as far as we're concerned. And, you know, there's a topic for discussion there. So that's one of the advantages, certainly. You know, the idea that socialism, the idea that fascism means something that is the opposite of state ownership, as it were. And this has sort of been mentioned earlier as well. The idea that fascism automatically means that is, you know, as I think Kevin said, he's been proved wrong by what's happening in the United States at the moment. I mean, I know Trump wouldn't call himself a fascist. Of course he wouldn't. But nevertheless, he'd regard himself as right. You know, if it were put to him, he'd regard himself as right-wing rather than left-wing. He'd say he was anti-socialist anyway. Yeah, you know, he's nevertheless perfectly prepared to sort of, you know, use the might of the state. He's definitely not a libertarian. Use the might of the state to control industry and so on and so forth. And in fact, he has been called a socialist by the libertarians in the States, Trump, for that reason, for the fact that he's sort of, you know, interested in the state having oversight over industry and so on and so forth. And if I can refer to China, I mean, China calls itself, people must have seen this, socialism with a, socialism with a, socialism with Chinese characteristics, that's it. Socialism with Chinese characteristics. In one of these discussions, three or four months ago, somebody said, no, what you've got in China is fascism with Chinese characteristics. I think that's actually a lot more accurate. But nevertheless, the fascism of China isn't the fascism of somebody like Orban, who's basically anti-state intervention and so on. It's profound state intervention. So there's a, you know, these words sort of mean different things in different circumstances. And certainly the original use of the term fascism, as in Mussolini's fascist Italy, they were sort of, you know, an extreme nationalizing government. You know, they weren't libertarian, as it were, in the sense that sort of, you know, right-wingers saying the states are. So, okay, these are all topics for discussion and, you know, worth discussing. And, you know, as I say, often give us the opportunity to put forward what we mean by socialism.
Yep. Okay, thanks, Howard. Back to Kevin.
I was very struck when Corbyn and Sultana set up their new party. They must have had something similar discussion. They obviously didn't say we're the left party or we're the new Labour party or we're the advanced socialist party. They went for this kind of neutral name, like your party, a bit like I think it was Howard saying, if we started now, we might use the word socialist. So obviously they've had this, this issue has arisen for them as well. I mean, I'm a bit struck. Everybody does agree that we're not a left-wing party, as you know, we're outside that kind of left-right-wing classification. But you know, we do use the name socialism, and I think as Paul was saying, that of course means then we get a more sympathetic response when we go to left-wing groups because they see socialists and they think, well, we're socialists too, so we've got something in common. And obviously, in the Spectator, they won't think that way. So we're in this kind of a funny zone, I think, of we're almost unanimous in agreeing we're not a left-wing party, but we do use left-wing terminology. And I'm not proposing changing this or anything, but I'm just pointing out, you know, that's where we are. And I can understand two people have said, you know, if you had to pick, you probably would say our ideology is a little bit more characteristic of what's conventionally regarded as the left rather than the right, though, as I think it was Howard just saying, the terms are so vague, and that's part of the problem too, that, you know, left, right, and the associated characteristics, they can vary from era to era and from country to country. So I'm not sure I've improved any understanding or any enlightenment by the talk. Anyway, that's me. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. I think as... Dougie, you got your hand up. You're next.
Yeah, I mean, politics is funny. I mean, I saw Jennings speak, you know, when he joined Farage and Reform or whatever, and he was going about workers' wages being low and, you know, the country's broken and things like that. I mean, they've got to appeal to workers to get elected, right? You know, so they've got to say some things that workers will vote for, although Reform say a lot of things that workers shouldn't vote for, right? You know, which is maybe privatising the health service and stuff like that, right? You know, But I mean, I don't know. I mean, we've got two battles, right? You know, there's nationalism and racism and all the rest of it. I mean, they use immigrants to get votes or whatever, you know, and it's just absolutely terrible the way that they do that, you know. And the left don't tend to do that, you know. They tend to try and support people coming into the country to try and work and better their lives or whatever, like British people have done all over the world, really, you know. Anyway, but I mean, nationalism and countries and markets and things, people think they're inevitable and they're here to stay, really, you know. So we've got a battle in our hands, but we've got to actually put forward true socialism and not get involved in what the left do, really, you know. Anyway, I'm rambling a bit. Anyway, okay.
Okay, thanks to Lee. Anyone else? Steve again.
Just quickly. I mean, I'm sure I would agree with this the sort of moral tone of a lot of the left. You know, we do, you know, we envisage socialist society as giving people the opportunity to act more collectively, to act more compassionately, to act in a equitable way in our social relations. And, you know, you can see this. You'll see this time and again in lefty groups, but it's just a case of, yes, we want fairness, we want equity, we want justice, and these things on their own are completely meaningless within the capitalist system.
All right, okay, thanks. Darren?
Hi. First of all, sorry if there's any background noise because I'm outside. I thought struck me as arising out of this discussion, which had never really struck me before, and it's how it's so unhelpful now in 2026, even the terms left wing and right wing. Maybe this for me is more kind of pressing living in the States. I don't know, because I don't know about Britain's situation. But to just get into sort of casual conversation with people, I'm not talking about political meetings, I'm not talking about being online, but just in casual conversation, to even like acknowledge that you're left wing or right wing to someone immediately shuts down any chance of like a genuine conversation, the genuine sort of discussion with people. And I think perhaps it is tied in with the culture wars, etc. You know, maybe, you know, the callous class have done a trick on the rest of us, where we're literally just fighting over, you know, like bathrooms or whatever. You know, and I'm not downplaying things like that. But it just strikes me that even in the past, to call yourself a socialist could generate a response, you know, good or bad. But it's just striking to me now, and I don't know how other people feel now, but just the left-right thing now is, you know, and we're not even a part of it, as we've acknowledged, it's so unhelpful now, you know, because it just basically means that it basically puts people in their boxes, puts people in their tribes, etc. And it kind of cuts down the opportunity to actually talk to people, to argue, you know, to argue with people, let's be honest. Because people are just so sort of hidebound in their mindset of who they are. I'm left wing, I'm right wing, you know, I can't talk to you, I can't even entertain the idea of having a discussion with you over this terminology, etc. And, you know, thanks for Kevin for giving the talk, which is obviously just like, as he mentioned in his opening, you know, just like almost like a provocation, provocative title. But I think it does lend itself to a more important issue, which is it's if anything, it's increasingly important that we do sort of try and make this maybe in our propaganda that, you know, that this whole left-right thing now, as people have pointed out when they've talked about China, when they've talked about Hungary, when they've talked about Trump, this left-right-right thing just doesn't make sense in any sense. You know, once you explore it, once you unpeel it, all these kind of sort of verities of the left, verities of the right, suddenly just kind of seem ridiculous when you actually examine them in any way closely. You know, and unfortunately, we're not talking about class politics now. Unfortunately, we're talking about a form of culture politics. You know, that's where we're at. You know, and it's kind of depressing. But if we know that's where we're starting from, then yeah. Maybe we can kind of like, reconsider how we like target our propaganda. You know, target, you know, like the issues we address. Maybe make a point to people. Maybe try and sort of reach out to those people who they themselves now kind of see that this right-left thing is just such a nonsense. It always was, but it's just so stark now in 2026. Cheers.
Okay, thanks, Darren. Andy again.
Well, I've spoken a couple of times. Steve would like to speak.
Okay, off you go, Steve.
Yeah, hi everyone. I'm here tonight. Adam extended an invite to me through Qumran, who's a member of the Platypus Society. So I thought this would be an interesting subject to listen to. It's obviously extremely wide-ranging and you can't do it in an hour and a half. So I think I'd just like to, at this point, make some general comments rather than have a platform and give my views and see how you guys react to what I've heard from the original talk. And what I'll say will probably be contentious for you, but it's not just provocation for the sake of it. I'm trying to find some clarity wherever I go among left people today. In the talk, I found the general theme to be that although you as a party regard yourselves as not part of the left, the generalised left, you seem to define the talk to me in many ways seem to be that you define yourself against the right. That seems incorrect and quite shallow. And it came across most noticeably in the, for want of a better phrase, anti-Trumpism. A left shouldn't define itself as opposed to a right. A left should have a distinct socialist viewpoint of the world and capital, not just be against the right. I think that's one point to make, and it'd be interesting how you react to that. I also don't think that a left position is necessarily just anti-war and for peace. The most basic liberal would be anti-war and for peace. And indeed, the most astute right-wingers would also claim, i.e. Trump, trying to get his Nobel Peace Prize perhaps, would also claim that through his political outlook at the moment, he's anti-war in general, in global terms, and trying to search for peace. So I don't think that's quite a way to determine whether you are a left or not. I'm absolutely not a supporter of most people on the left, hence I'm here to listen to what you have to say, and I go elsewhere. But I think you've been a little unclear or unfair about the difference between yourselves, and I do apologise, I've not read all your literature, of yourselves and what you call as the generalised left. The generalised left I have very many problems with, but they are not all reformists. And although it's paper talk, if you like, some of them will espouse quite revolutionary, not activities, but literature. So I think you've been a bit unfair to say that you're, if you like, more left than they are or not like them because they're not as avowed socialists as you are. I think it'd take a great deal more incisiveness as to what makes the difference between yourselves and them. I mean, for me, what would define a left, and I think the chap called Steve Finch, is it? Sorry, Steve, I've mispronounced that. I think he made the point, and quite rightly so, that for any socialist who's trying to build a proletarian movement, the major thing that we should try to build within that is that if the working class took power in a party of its own, the major problem will be the power of capital. I think that's what Steve says. I don't think I'm misrepresented him. That then raises the question, so what sort of movement are we trying to build and why? And I think that goes way beyond electoralism and getting votes. I think it means understanding what capital is, and we are all the working class part of capital. What capital is, and how do we go beyond what we live in, which is the dictatorship of capital? And I know that you won't like this either, but to go beyond the dictatorship of capital, we need the dictatorship of the proletariat. And I understand that will be extremely contentious for you guys, but that's, for me, how you start the very most basic point of defining what a left is. Sorry, there's a lot in there and I have a lot more to say, but I don't talk it, so I'll leave it at that, and thanks for your time.
All right, thanks, Steve. Andy, do you want to come back in now since you were... since it's your kind of go?
Thanks. Well, sort of forgotten what I was going to say now. thanks, Steve. Good heavens. I don't really want to address what Steve Roberts just said, because there's so much in there, really. But one thing I would ask, and I don't shy away from it, is Steve Roberts has said, what needs to happen before any socialist movement can be effective is a dictatorship of the proletariat. I find that interesting, and I wonder what he really means by that, and who he thinks is ultimately going to be the authoritarian leadership of that. Thanks.
Okay, Steve.
So, sorry, I forgot. I just taking my bloody headset off. I do apologise. I mean, I think Steve Roberts has just raised some really interesting questions about the basis of the Socialist Party case, and what I'll try and be as brief as I can. What we've got to do is what the aim is the establishment of this, what I mentioned before, the free association of producers, which is the term that Marx uses in Capital. He's not even keen on the word communism, Marx. He talks about free association of producers, and that free association of producers would be what it will be, a society in which there is no possible form of economic coercion. As human beings, we have to work, we have to interact with nature to produce the things that we need to live. But within that context, the coercion of the human condition, if you like, there will not be, in a socialist society that we envisage, any possible form of coercion. Therefore, we're talking about, again, within that context of the human condition, we're talking about voluntary work. Voluntary work, I'm sorry if you're getting there's a load of fucking dogs barking outside. I apologise if you can hear it. We're looking at voluntary work and voluntary consumption. Now, the only way that we can achieve that isn't through, as Steve Roberts was suggesting, through electoralism. That is not that. That is a huge mis. This has been a huge misunderstanding about our party, because we do stand, we do put ourselves forward in elections, and we put ourselves forward in elections in order to prevent the state being used against us once we have got a convinced working class. Now, our approach is not that the reason that we don't get involved with reformist movements, which I think would define what your party is, what SWP is, etc., etc. They seek support on things which are far short of the type of society that we're after. And so we've got, if we're going to, I'm sorry this is taking a while to explain, but if we're going to achieve the society that we're looking towards, then we have to put forward to our fellow workers the way that capital works. Our enemy isn't the right wing. The enemy, if we're going to use that word, is the capitalist mode of production. And that is what we have to convince our fellow workers about, that capitalist mode of production is always going to work against our material interests. Wherever we are in the world, whatever our gender, whatever our sexual preference, this is what determines our material existence. And our attitude is that capital, once we achieve a conscious working class on a world basis, because capital is a world system, once we achieve that, there's nothing that can possibly stop the working class doing what it's already doing, which is to organise to run the production system. But we will organise it and produce and run it for our own benefit without the mediation of any money, which is where the economic coercion disappears, without need for money, with people, as I said, acting voluntarily and collectively, working as they wish, or as we need as a society to do, and consuming as they wish of whatever society is able to produce. And given the vast productivity, the vast industrial capacity that we've developed as workers under the lash of capital, that is an absolutely practical alternative to the shit that we live with today. I hope that answers some of your questions, Steve.
Oh, right, okay, thank you. Darren, next.
I'm going to talk.
Hi, yeah. Just a couple of brief points in response to Steve Roberts' contribution. Firstly, I think he's been selective in his listening to suggest that either the SPGB or contributors were purely saying this binary of like left, anti-war, right, not so much anti-war. You know, the point was raised that, you know, there is actually, the business of Marjorie Taylor Greene, amongst other things, is the split within the right now on the issue of intervention and isolationism, etc. That's one minor point. The second point is, he mentioned the business about the dictatorship of the proletariat is like a wee hand grenade into the meeting, so to speak. Maybe as Steve acknowledged, he's not read all the literature. You know, we've written extensively in this the past. You know, if you're talking about the dictatorship of the proletariat as referenced by Marx and Engels, etc., you know, in and around, you know, the events of the Paris Commune, we totally don't have a problem with that term. We don't, you know, we don't have an issue with the term. We understand that term. And as Hal Draper, the late American Trotskyist, wrote a book on the dictatorship of the proletariat, the term, you know, the terminology of it, how little it was used actually in Marx's time in the first and second international time, and how it was something, it was a phrase almost, that was seized upon by the Bolsheviks to then become something else. Of course we have an issue with what the vanguardist term is, dictatorship of the proletariat, because we recognise what it actually means is dictatorship over the proletariat. So he's, you know, the truth of the matter is, it's another distinction we have against the left. We are not presenting us, you know, we have a unique position, we have an uncompromising position, but we are not presenting ourselves as a leadership to the class. And we have never presented ourselves as a leadership of the class. And obviously some opponents, because we are so sort of emphatic in our socialism, so vehement in our sort of hostility to the left, they misunderstand that. They see ourselves as, you know, like we are the leaders joined behind us. We're actually arguing that the party, you know, socialism, democracy are so inseparable that if you don't have thoroughgoing democracy within the organisation, within the movement, then to talk about socialism is a nonsense, because you will have these leaders, you know, who will actually turn against the working class when they've always argued that they are representing the working class. And that's unfortunately one of the great lessons of the 20th century, you know, and I don't think we should forget that. Yeah, cheers.
Okay, thanks, Darren. It's coming out to 9:05, so I'm wondering, so Kevin, have you got anything to say on the things you've heard so far?
Just a very short point, which I figured I said it, I thought it was a really lovely summary of basically tonight's talk and where we're at, is that our enemy, or we're not opposed to the right wing or to right wing parties, we're opposed to capitalism, and that's where we transcend the left right, you know. So, you know, that's fundamentally our position. It's the system, not the parties, that we want changed. We want the system changed. And I just thought that's a short way of basically saying at least where we regard we stand in all of this.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. Any last comments? Howard?
Just to say, Paddy, that the dictatorship of the proletariat obviously means different things to different people. Lots been said about it, lots been written about it. One of the things that's been said about it is that the word dictatorship meant something different when it was first coined in the 19th century. It just meant the proletariat taking over, which is very much what we want to happen. But maybe this would be a good topic for, you know, in itself for one of these meetings. And I don't know whether Steve Roberts, that is, would be prepared to give us a talk on this, and we can then sort of, I was going to say slug it out with him. No, argue it out with him and see where it gets us. But, you know, that's for the future, maybe.
Okay, thanks. I would just maybe just offer a small comment on my own. I just thought, hearing what Steve Roberts was saying, I thought, you know, during these talks, we usually don't bother to sort of lay out our basic case, because, you know, most of us are familiar with this and we know it, and so we don't kind of rehearse it. But if somebody comes along who doesn't really, he's not really that familiar, I mean, I can really see why they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't be very clear. So I think, you know, kudos to Steve for, you know, speaking up and putting some points. I felt that probably if he understood our case a little bit better, he probably wouldn't have said one or two of those things. He probably would have realised that, you know, actually they're a bit wide of the mark. But, you know, fair dues, and keep the conversation going. Now over to Andy.
Yeah, just to sort of say that as well. I mean, Steve Roberts, I don't know you, Steve, but you come across, you seem to be a nice enough sort of bloke. You know, we've all been on a journey, and it seemed to me that it raises my hackles, really, the terminology of the dictatorship of the proletariat, because I was I had to work really very hard when I was younger to be not recruited into Leninist organizations. They say, you know, read State and Revolution and read this and that and all the rest of it, and I did, you know, and I thought it was rubbish. You know, I could read right through it straight away, but they would, you know, approach you, you know, with a priestly authority to tell you, oh, no, that's what, it doesn't really mean that. It doesn't mean that, because that's just the first stage of the, you know, the, and I just thought it was like completely nonsense. And the makeup of those types of organizations with their so-called democratic centralism and all this, I never fell for it. So, you know what? Steve, stick with us, mate. Just stick in and let's see what we can do. All right, thanks.
Okay, Steve, possibly like last word or nearly.
Yeah, I don't think you should patronise Brother Roberts. Look, if he's still got arguments against us, I'm sure he'll come back and put them to us. And hopefully he will do. Right, that's me. Thank you.
Okay. Steve, back to you quickly.
Yeah, very quickly. No, thank you, Steve. No, I don't regard it as patronising. Look, hopefully we're all aiming for one thing. There's going to be contestation. There's going to be arguments. There's going to be disputes. As long as it's done in the right spirit and we don't become patronising, I think for me today especially, even at my age and been through the left for 40 years, what's missing is clarity, and I think any discussion, hopefully we can get clarity from it, and that nobody becomes dogmatic about it. And I think it's slightly disrespectful to say that I don't quite understand what the SPGB stands for. I wouldn't say that I do entirely, but I do have a much wider grasp of stuff on the left. Perhaps not the finer details of what your guy, but I can see already that there will be some stumbling blocks in what I regard as fundamental and what you guys do as well. And I think clearly what's been said tonight, and that's why I didn't just deliberately throw a grenade in, but it is necessary. I mentioned the dictators were proletariat, and the guy, was it Howard? I don't know, sorry, maybe someone else, suggested have a chat around that. And, of course, that's going to be a major theme for you guys. I recently listened to one of your members, Johnny Mercer. He was actually on the Platypus Palant. Johnny was quite effusive in his praise of what Platypus does. I'm not a Platypus member, but he then went on essentially and outlined the anti-Leninism of the SPGB. Now, that anti-Leninism may be against the Leninist parties that he or yourselves have come across on the left for many years, but does that mean that you're anti-Leninist in all respects? I suspect it may well be. And that's, I think, why Andrew mentioned about authoritarian leadership. I could counter, and it wouldn't be fair, but in those sort of terms, Andrew, I could counter that you sound like Occupy, no leadership, no values. You understand the point I'm trying to make? Let me finish. I don't think glib remarks about authoritarian leadership without backing it up with some political ideas means too much. And when I think perhaps one of the misunderstandings is the whole name, the party. When I talk about the party, I'm talking about a working class movement, the working class itself forming its own party, not some left intellectuals forming a party and giving the working class some ideas to follow. It's a completely different thing. Of course, there has to be some political leadership. We all know political ideas have to come from without the working class. It won't come spontaneously within it. We all know that. That's why you're here. So let's not denounce political leadership per se. But yes, absolutely, we need to talk about authoritarianism. And I know the Bolshevik Revolution and Lenin is problematic for you guys, but I think it does deserve a much broader discussion rather than just glib remarks about authoritarianism. I don't think that's sufficient.
Well, let me just say something on that.
Sure.
Steve, I've got experience of being attempted to be recruited in my 20s into the Revolutionary Communist Group, David Yaffe's gang, and Frank Faraday's Revolutionary Communist Party,
which I was part of. So you're not telling me anything I don't know, Andrew.
All offshoots of the the International Socialists, right? And they wanted me to be in their inner circle, and I wouldn't go near them. I had an instinct that they were wrong-uns, right? And I was right, okay? So it's up to you. If you want to follow leaders, mate, go for it. I'm not doing that, right? So that's all I'll say on that.
Right, okay. Right. Let's not get carried away. One more comment from Steve, and then time to finish.
Yeah, just wanted to put very quickly. And anti-Leninist. The thing is, we're not evangelists. We're not evangelists for Marx. He was a writer. He was a thinker. We're not bound by every single thing he says. Nor would we say that every single thing that Lenin was arguing was wrong. That's not our position. We at the time, in 1917, 1918, the party took the position, which we've kept ever since, was that the economic conditions for a socialist revolution were not there in Russia. They were not there in Europe because we had not got a conscious working class. That's our big problem with Lenin. We should definitely talk about this again, Steve. I hope we do. Thank you.
Okay, well, this sounds like this discussion could run and run, but sadly we have to stop somewhere, and it's gone 9 o'clock now. So thanks everyone for coming, and take it up another time, definitely. So meanwhile, next week, it's the talk is on alienation, what it is, what it feels like, how to end it. So thanks very, very much to Kevin for giving that really good talk, and thanks everyone for a really good discussion, and we'll catch up again next week.
Thanks, Kevin.
Cheers, Paddy. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Cheers, all. Good night. No.
Thanks for your contribution, Steve.
Later, comrades.
Bye.